You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello, Dan. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm in the Dog Bowl in Berea. The Tribe took one on the chin yesterday. The World Series now 1-1 as they move back to Chicago.
You give one, you take one.
Yeah.
It's a heavyweight fight.
Yes, indeed. The other Ohio Business Machine hot topic of the day, Josh McCown. It looks like he will be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns on Sunday, although the team has not yet named a starter and likely won't. Until we get closer to game time. We're going to get into our matchup preview, get you who to know on this Jets team defensively, offensively. They have one of the best defensive fronts in the National Football League.
A lot of very well-known names.
Oh, yes, Sheldon Richardson. Of course, you've got Muhammad Wilkerson. And Leonard Williams might be playing the best of all.
Darren Lee, former Buckeye.
Steve McClendon, former Steeler.
David Harris, former.
Darrell Revis, Buster Skrine, former
Wolverine.
Cleveland Brown.
David Harris is a Wolverine.
I did not know that. From the school up north?
Yes, he is.
From Michigan. We'll also talk about, we're going to hear from Brandon Marshall as well. His conference call with the Cleveland media. It is must listen. We'll do as well. Fantasy football. So get your questions in using the hashtag AskTFC on to at, of course, Nathan Zagura at Browns_daily. And we'll have Tracy Howard in studio at some point, which is going to be very exciting as well. Making the transition to safety. A lot of people don't know about Tracy Howard, undrafted free agent. Doesn't get, obviously, a lot of pub, but he's a guy that went out and has done a good job. The coaches like him, and we'll see how he can go ahead and how he'll perform in that role going forward. Because I think, quite frankly, at this point, it's
slim pickings.
It's his to lose.
It absolutely is. And I think, for me, what's going to be interesting is to understand and go back to the times in training camp when Hugh Jackson referred to Tracy Howard as my guy. And maybe just dive into, you know, what was he doing to become Hugh Jackson's guy? And if I was right back then as I am now, it's just like just working hard every day, grinding it out, and giving your all to make this football team, as you said, as an undrafted free agent.
And what you say, coaches always look for consistency. So can you consistently do your job? And if you do that, you're going to play on this defense. And right now, the Browns, we know it. The pass defense is a big issue. It's a big issue. We're well into double-digit games in a row with multiple passing touchdowns allowed. Browns are now the only team in the NFL this year that have allowed multiple passing touchdowns in every game. They need to do something on the back end of that defense. We didn't see much improvement against Cincinnati.
Well, and even furthermore, now it's pick your poison for a lot of these football teams. Not only are we giving up touchdowns in the passing game because of what we've had to play with, I think some cases on the back end, no Jordan Poyer, no Joe Hayden, you know, and I'm not knocking some of the guys that have filled in, Tracy Howard switching positions, Breann Body Calhoun having to play a role, even though he's done very well. And then, you know, now we can't stop the run.
Well, it has been, you know, it's gotten progressively worse. You go in the New England game, you hold the Garrett Blunt to about 30-something yards, but he scores. Then you get to the game against Tennessee, you hold him to 60 yards on 20 carries, which is a pretty good job, talking about DeMarco Murray, but he scores. And then this week, it was just kind of like the floodgates open for Jeremy Hill. 9 carries, what do you have, 168 yards or 69 yards
18
rushing?
18 yards a rip.
Yeah, 18 yards a rip. Giovanni Bernard also ran for 80 yards.
5 yards
and
a rip.
And a touchdown. They both scored. So this is a team defensively, and we went through the numbers yesterday. We'll go through them again as we kind of go through the matchups. But right now it's 31st in basically every important category in the league. They're 30th in scoring defense, 31st in yards per play, 31st in third down efficiency. there are problems on that side of
the
ball.
There definitely are. And as I've said before, and as many people know, it is a copycat league. So the runs or schemes or blocking schemes that have given us fits in the past couple weeks is what teams are going to lead out with as a part of the game. Teams are going to go, and I'll just talk the New York Jets for this week because that's our opponent. The New York Jets may deviate from who they are and what and how they run the football through five or six football games to scheme up what the success that, you know, maybe Washington had with Matt Jones, or, you know, last week the Bengals had, you know, with that shift. They're gonna do the shift, they're gonna do the motion, they're gonna run that counter tray, and if we can't stop it, you're gonna see that, and then the Jets will go back and go, okay, we've given you something you can't stop, now we're gonna mix in and we're scrambling to try to fix it still if we haven't fixed it yet. And then they're gonna give us a little dose of, you know, the zone scheme or what Forte has been able to do successfully thus far this year. Then they're going to throw in some screens and get Forte the football out of the backfield. And then we're still going to be scrambling defensively. So to take a stand and fix what has hurt us in the past is going to be the key. And then you can actually turn the page towards stopping what the Jets are on film.
The two games where Matt Forte has been the offense for them, 30 carries, 100 yards rushing, multiple touchdowns, week two against Buffalo, week seven against Baltimore. What do those games have in common? Those are the two games that the Jets won. In their losses, 9 carries for 19 yards, 12 carries for 53 yards, 14 carries for 27 yards. Not a factor.
So you got to figure 15 or more carries. Is their plan coming to Cleveland, especially based off of what happened last week in Cincinnati? You got to get the football in Matt Forte's hands 15 times. So there's a little bit of patience.
Sure.
You know, for the offense and their ability to, you know, say that the Browns get out early and say we have an opening scoring drive and we go up 7-0. It behooves the Jets, based on who they are now, with the fact that Fitzpatrick's going to give up the football. They've got a consistent weapon in Brandon Marshall, but they don't have that 1-2 punch like they've always had with Decker and Marshall. And I think that's changed a lot for this offense.
It has. One guy who stepped up, Quincy Enunwa, he's been impressive. He leads the team with 32 catches, second with 409 yards. Obviously, they miss Eric Decker because of his size and what he can do in the red zone. They still don't have a tight end. There's tight ends on the season. On the season, have 3 catches for 26 yards.
Right. Just not a part of their offense.
How does that happen in today's NFL?
Well, first of all, you have to look at who you got. And Kellen Davis is not a receiving tight end.
No, not at all. But you bring in Austin Seferian Jenkins, and obviously he's got to get up to speed in your offense.
Right. Has he been active?
One game. Okay. 2 catches for 17 yards. He blew away with the previous 7 games worth of tight end production, which was at that point 1 catch for 9 yards. So the guy's been a godsend.
So he doubled both almost.
Yeah, he's been a godsend. Exactly. But that hasn't been a big part of their offense. They do a lot of 3 wide. Sherrone Peak starting to play a lot, but he kind of is their tight end in that. And then Jalen Marshall, 6 catches for 75 yards as well. But like I said, we'll get into that team. What I want to talk to you about is what the Browns are doing, and take us into a defensive week of practice. So Josh McCown's been cleared, has not been named the starter. You're the Jets. You're probably thinking he's going to be the starter, right? But if he's not, it's going to be Kevin Hogan. And we saw so much read option out of Kevin Hogan, and we even showed it when Cody Kessler was in there, 3 carries for 37 yards. How different is their preparation for this game, not knowing definitively that McCown's the starter versus if they knew 100% McCown was the starter?
Well, what I would do, and if I were the defense coordinator for the New York Jets in my preparation for the Cleveland Browns this week, and I'll go back to, you know, the time that I spend with the high school kids, where the spread offenses and the zone read is a heavy portion of a lot of offensive systems at that level and in college, and we're seeing it sprinkle here and there with the in the NFL, and of course last week with Kevin Hogan and the Cleveland Browns. You build in when Kevin Hogan's in the game and he's at quarterback. It's similar to what we used to do when I was in San Diego, when we used to play the Raiders with Darren McFadden, or the Miami Dolphins with Ricky Williams and Ronnie Brown, and they ran the Wildcat. You had a specific check, and the way that you structure this, and it kind of goes in, you know, with the way when I want to try to attack someone on special teams, it's like, first of all, I have to make sure that I can't give up the big play, You know, that yeah, you have to be sound defensively the same way they have to be sound, essentially, like versus fake if I want to go block one. So am I good against the fake? Am I sound against the big play if they want to take a shot? If the answer is yes, the answer is yes. That means you have to have your three shell, your quarter shell, whatever you want to do. But then you get into the nitty-gritty of the front, and you count your gaps. And how are they going to attack us? And how do we make – I don't want to have my end, and in this case – it would be Leonard Williams and Sheldon Richardson to have to think a whole lot or to play two guys where you have to step and take away the quarterback and then, or I'm sorry, to come down to take away the give and then react back to the quarterback. Sure. No, it's something essentially we're doing. It's like you want to be able to have them come down the line and tackle the back from behind, and you want a backer scraping over the top or a nickel, or if you can do it out of nickel, you have your nickel essentially defeat that block and come up and make a play on the quarterback. So there, I would have some type of hands check or some type of check from a front standpoint that when Hogan's in the game, the bells and whistles go off in my head, and we get into that front that is sound against all the things that we saw Hogan do in the passing game, and then more so than anything, we're able to stop him from rushing for 100 yards on the ground with his legs because it was legs first, pass second. And I know that's going to change, and Hugh Jackson's going to add wrinkles if it is Hogan in the passing game, but still – he's still starting his first game in the National Football League. He wasn't oh so successful with his arm. And I think the Jets are then going to study the concepts that he was given last week in the passing game and ready for those. And you think, look at the secondary. You know, you've got Screen and you've got Revis. So they like their matchups in the passing game to begin with, even though, you know, Revis is a shell of who he is.
Sure.
But ultimately they like their matchups and they're going to be do enough to force Hogan to make tough throws in small windows and then force him to beat him with his legs. And then, as I said, you have a check to get into that's going to stop or take away or, I'm sorry, limit what they do with the zone read.
So when you go through a week of practice, okay, how many reps of actual practice, like reps against the scout team, do you get in the 3 days of practice?
Collectively?
Yeah.
I would say there's probably
as a defense.
I would say you do 9-on-7 on Wednesday, Thursday. So I would say you'd probably do a dozen plays, a dozen, you know, Jets plays. Or I'm sorry, the Browns will practice 12 plays against the Jets, vice versa. So the Jets will have 12 plays in 9-on-7. Some, and I'd say three or four of those are going to be the zone read. The rest are going to be Crowell, Duke Johnson concepts of what the Browns do with them in the ground game.
Okay.
And then I would say you probably have 15 7-on-7 plays both days. And then I would say you probably have 30 reps of team, 25 to 30 plays
total for the 3 days, or
total for in a day. So 12, 15, that's 27 and 25 more. So 52 plays in a day, 52 offense and defensive plays in a day. Then you go, that's Wednesday, Thursday. So that's 104. And then I would say that's cut maybe in by a third. So we'll say 40 on Friday.
Okay, so let's say that it was
about 150 plays.
You're preparing for Josh McCown last year. There's no read option stuff. You're not worried about any of that. You now, with this Kevin Hogan situation, you're saying about 25% of the plays are going to be devoted to Kevin Hogan in their practice.
Yes, 20. Yeah, 20. I would say.
So that's a lot, right? So does that give the Browns any kind of?
And really, it honestly is once you install what it is that you want to do against Kevin Hogan in the game in that zone read, you want to do it every couple times. You actually want to try to trick the guys, and maybe you come out with Hogan and McCown, and then McCown motions out. You try to create scenarios to kind of trick your defense, but ultimately to get into the check and to be able to take away the zone read. So I would say collectively maybe 25 plays all week to stop Kevin Hogan in the zone read. Everything else is.
But what about Kevin Hogan if he has to play quarterback? Because he's.
But I mean, our offense is not going to change. Our offense is not going to. I mean, Hugh Jackson's passing concepts are Hugh Jackson's passing concepts. The playbook, you know, expounds significantly if Josh McCown's your quarterback in the passing game, and it's still going to be fairly limited. And you know what? If I were the. I know you can't spend this much time, but if you have defensive quality control guys and other scouts, what I would have done is maybe go back and study Cody Kessler in his first game and what he was given by Hugh Jackson, what types of passes, because it's probably similar to what Kevin Hogan's going to be able to, you know, get given. And then, and we saw that last week. And then what did, how much did it expound in the second week Cody Kessler was a starter? And that just goes to show how much more comfortable he was. And I think that might mimic what Hugh Jackson would trust potentially Kevin Hogan with as a part of our game plan.
That's good stuff. This is what I like.
Right.
Get into the mindset because of what you're doing.
And my point is it's rookie quarterback. You know, even though Hogan has the legs, Kessler doesn't have the legs. Kessler's got the better arm and is more accurate, and obviously a third-round draft pick versus a fifth-round draft pick, a guy that's been in your system and a guy that's not. But that's the thought process of what – because sometimes, you'll be very honest, when you – the uncertainty of not knowing who's going to start and what you have to be ready for, you really are going to be chasing ghosts. And what I mean is you're going to have all the resources in your building trying to put together – clips or analytics or Excel spreadsheets for
plans, sure.
Potentially of what you could see, and that's given to the players in doses. They give them what they don't give them everything. They only give them what they need, and then ultimately by Friday, when you know that final injury report comes out, you scrap the portion of the Kevin Hogan plan, or you always just you kind of dummy it down to a small portion if McCown is questionable, but full participant in practice on Friday, you know you're going to get some account with a little wrinkle of Kevin Hogan.
For sure.
Which is essentially what we went into the Bengals game with. It was initially supposed to be Cody Kessler the starter, Kevin Hogan as the wrinkle guy with Terrell Pryor in a limited basis.
Right. And that's what you
got. So that's what you would prepare for.
Sure.
You prepare for McCown with a Kevin Hogan like wrinkle.
And we've been talking about this for even last year. It's like you got to prepare for Johnny or Josh when you didn't know who was the starter was going to be and how much time do you devote to this, that, whatever. At the end of the day, the basic concepts are the basic concepts. You're going to put a couple things in to deal with it, and that's it.
Three to five things change on defense per week.
So does it give if when you were in a situation where you didn't know who you were facing, is the strategic advantage we're talking about in the single-digit percents?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because the core of who you are and what you do, it still boils down to stopping the run and pressuring the quarterback.
All right. That's what it comes down to. You're right. And taking away the football.
Yes.
When we come back, Hugh Jackson will be live at the podium soon here after practice is wrapped up in Cleveland. We will let you – here in Berea, I'm sorry. We'll let you know what the news and notes coming out of there are. We'll also have a Tracy Howard for you in studio. We'll meet the Jets, and we're going to hear – from Brandon Marshall, the Jets star wide receiver. All of that and much, much more coming up on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. So much to discover. Please don't stop me now. Every time I touch it.
If you have a serious work-related injury, call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk and Elk, proud sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Go Browns! Nathan Zgura and Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. And we're going to take a look at this Jets team right now and get you ready for this game and understand the Browns' opponent in a game that many people think is the Browns' best chance to win in the next couple of weeks. Obviously, you have the tough matchup with Dallas, and then you go on the road to Baltimore. Home for Pittsburgh, home for the Giants, but this Jets team comes in here off. They're struggling.
Baltimore stinks.
Baltimore does stink, and I've been steadfast in saying that all year. Remember at Browns Countdown, I was mocked for saying that, but that's been the way that it is. This is a team 2-5, the Jets. They have beaten the Buffalo Bills. That seems like a long time ago on that night that led to the firing. I believe that was a Thursday night game, led to the firing of Chan Gailey.
Yes.
They have beaten as well the Baltimore Ravens 24-16. They have losses 28-3 to the Cardinals, 31-13 to the Steelers, 27-17 to the Seahawks, 24-3 to Kansas City. And then week one, they lost 23-22 in a nail-biter to the Cincinnati Bengals. And we've talked about this team struggling on offense, and a lot of it has to do with turnovers. Ryan Fitzpatrick leading the league with 11 interceptions already thrown this season, despite the fact that he hasn't been able to start every game this year due to the interceptions. So this is a team. You look at where they rank in the National Football League, and we'll start on the offensive side of the ball here, Ken. I mean, Ken. Mo. Matt Wilhelm. 23rd in total offense, 333.3 yards per game. 22nd passing offense, 231.9 yards per game. 101.4 in rushing offense. That's 20th. 30th in scoring offense. That's 17th. They are 20th on third downs, 38%. 31st in the red zone, 38.46%. So this is a bad offense that is near the bottom of every category in the league, at least in the bottom 12 in every category, but sacks allowed. This is a game where the Browns defense needs to show up.
It absolutely does, and I think, you know, there is some star power on this offense, and we talked about them early in the first segment. Brandon Marshall, Matt Forte, and I think they become very predictable. And we talked about the games they've been successful and had opportunities to win. Matt Forte has been a big part of that game plan, and it's not from an efficiency standpoint because he gets a lot of touches. But it's, you know, not for a lot of yards. There's not a lot of chunk plays. And I think, you know, maybe Matt Forte's lost a step, but he's still very productive when given the opportunity. And even in Brandon Marshall's case, Brandon Marshall and Ryan Fitzpatrick, as well as Eric Decker last year, I thought were so explosive, you know, with, I would say, plays of 15 yards or more.
Oh, yeah.
And this year, he's been limited to a bunch of curl routes and comebacks, you know, and maybe even some dig routes where he can catch the ball in space and do something with his legs, but their ability to throw the football down the field has diminished, not having the 1-2 punch of Decker and Marshall. And I think in this case, for us to stop this football team, and I mean, I could be wrong, it's limit Matt Forte's impact on the ground, force them to become one-dimensional, and then as you see, yes, the young, you know, Quincy Enunwa has stepped up and played well, so he gets a lot of targets, but the chunk plays, they rely on Brandon Marshall when they need a play. And the ball, it seems when I've watched them on national television, the ball is forced his way because he's such a big physical receiver, you know, very similar to Terrell Pryor, but a much more well-polished and accomplished receiver. He just makes plays. And I think that when they take his shots, it's not that it's caught. It's their chance to have another DB feeling the need to get physical with Marshall down the field, and they want to catch a flag. To just, you know, flip the field very quickly.
Well, I think you're right about that. And let's look at the wide receiving core. It is Brandon Marshall. He is your leader, 472 yards, 15.7 yards a catch, 2 touchdowns. But he only has 30 catches on 68 targets. So you talk about forcing him the ball. He's getting about 10 targets a game. But they're not even converting on 50% of them, which is a horrible figure in the National Football League. So 30 of 68 for 472 yards and 2 touchdowns.
And I'm
for
sorry
Marshall.
To interrupt, but even go back to last year. Marshall was what? Had 14 touchdowns last year?
Marshall and Decker last year. Marshall had 109 catches, 1,502 yards, 14 touchdowns.
14 touchdowns.
Decker had 80 catches, 1,027 yards, and 12 touchdowns.
Correct.
And Marshall did that. 109 catches on 173 targets, well over 50% conversion. Decker had 80 catches on 132 targets, insane efficiency.
And that's my point. And I think, and going back to last year, I don't remember, you know, without diving into New York Jets, and really understanding and being a fan of them, I remember the Jets would plot the football down the field very well, get into the red zone, get inside the 30, and get inside the red zone, which is where the 1-2 punch of Decker Marshall. You know, really, they got a lot of their touchdowns. You know, running by guys, understanding what coverage they were going to get down the red zone, and Fitzpatrick threading a needle to one of these two guys on a consistent basis.
They threw 33 touchdowns as a team a year ago, 26 to Marshall and Decker.
Right.
And yes, those guys were both scoring every single week, it seemed like, for those people who played fantasy football and had them. That's kind of what it was. They were scoring every single week.
I mean, to kind of rewind and go back, This team doesn't have so much of an identity, and they can't move the football into that scoring zone to be able to use the size of Marshall, and they don't have the 1-2 punch of Decker Marshall anymore, so they're having to force the football and take their chances, and a lot of their drives get stymied. They're having to punt the football and give whoever it is they're playing an opportunity to go down the field and get their own points.
Well, that's why they're on the season 31st in red zone offense. They have really struggled because that's where Decker was making his money. And as we talked about earlier, they don't have a tight end involved in the game plan. So let's look at this receiving core. You know about Marshall. He's got 900 career receptions. He did have 8 catches for 114 yards and a touchdown against the Steelers. He's got 12 100-yard games as a Jet. On the other side, it's Quincy Enunwa, who's a second-year player. A lot of people don't know about Quincy Enunwa, but he's been their best receiver. I think you can make the case this year. Sixth-round pick out of Nebraska, 6'2", 225. So he is big. He's caught 32 of his 48 targets, so 67% for 409 yards and two touchdowns. After that, they've got Robbie Anderson, has been their number three receiver so far this season. He is a guy, he's an undrafted free agent, 12 catches for 121 yards. That actually makes him the fourth leading receiver on the team behind Decker, who's going to be out after three games. But Decker had 194 and two scores in his three games. Jerome Peake out of Clemson, 10 catches for 87 yards. Jalen Marshall, the undrafted free agent wide receiver from the Buckeyes, 6 for 75 on the year. We told you, no real tight ends of note, although I'm sure they're going to get Austin Seferin Jenkins more and more involved as it goes on. It just hasn't yet. And then you look at their ground game. It is Matt Forte, 460 yards. Now 200 of those have come in two games where he rushed for 30 times for 100 yards in the two wins that they have. All five of his touchdowns came in those two games.
And I know you have I know you have the stats in front of you. What is he receiving? Because that's, I think, is a huge part of what made Matt Forte great in Chicago.
Yeah, only 18 catches for 147 yards on the season for Forte. And interestingly enough, when you look at it, it was something that was a big part in game one. He had 5 for 59. Since then, 2 for 9, 2 for -1, 2 for 16, 2 for 7, 1 for 3. But then again, comes 4 for 54 and a touchdown last week against Baltimore. When he scores, they're undefeated. When he gets to 100 yards rushing, they're undefeated so far. So that's something to keep an eye on. But he's only had two games where he's really been a factor in the passing game all year, which is odd given what he did in Chicago.
Sure, and that's, you know, maybe something that Ryan Fitzpatrick was not comfortable with. You know, going into this football game, it was Bilal Powell and who was their runner last year?
Chris Ivory.
Chris Ivory was the big physical runner. You know, you kind of pound him out. He wasn't the greatest receiver out of the backfield. And I think Bilal Powell was just kind of popping on the scene and kind of a change of pace back for the New York Jets. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, as I've mentioned it, you know, time and time again now, it's with healthy wide receivers in Decker and Marshall. You know, there was no need to check the football down or to scheme these running backs because of who they were into the game plan. And that's been a shortcoming, I believe, because I think Forte is as good with the ball in his hands after a reception as he is, you know, off a handoff, you know, on the ground.
And for whatever reason, they've decided to use Bilal Powell more in that role on third downs. He leads the running backs with 24 catches, 34 targets, and 156 yards. His 24 catches, third most on the team. So he's really been the third option in the passing game. Now 18 catches for Forte. That is fourth as well on the team at running back there. So their two running backs are third and fourth in receptions so far this season. So who are they on the line? Because the one, they're not running the football very well, but the one stat that they're at least decent in is sacks allowed this year. And here's their offensive line from left to right at left tackle. They've got Ryan Clady, the former All-Pro, former Denver Bronco, four-time Pro Bowler, three-time All-Pro. So he is the left tackle. Your left guard is James Carpenter, an undrafted free agent from a year ago. In his sixth season, as an unrestricted free agent in his sixth season. Your center is Nick Mangold, the longest tenured Jet, 11 years, 7 Pro Bowls, including each of the last three. Now, he did leave last week's game with an injury, and his status is something that we will monitor up until kickoff. If he's out, that would be big in the middle line. His backup, for those wondering, is Wesley Johnson. At right guard, they have Brian Winters in his fourth year, and on right tackle, Ben Ilana in his sixth season. He's rotated with Brent Quvale. I don't even know how to say that.
Quvale.
Brent Quvale also at right tackle. But they've done a pretty good job so far this year in terms of protection. And you look at their guys, James Carpenter, who we talked about, the left guard. He is their top-graded lineman per Pro Football Focus. Very good grade in pass blocking, 6.1 positive, so that's good. Nick Mangold, also with a very positive grade this year. The guy that struggled, it's been Ryan Clady and Ben Ilana and Quvale. The three tackles have given up between them. Listen to this. The three tackles who have played, Clady at left tackle, the other two working at right tackle, have given up 39 hurries, 8 quarterback hits, and 7 sacks. So if you're going to beat this team and get to the quarterback, you're doing it off the edge. And I'll tell you, Emmanuel Ogba, 3 sacks the last 2 weeks. He told, I was talking to Hugh Jackson about it. You know what Hugh Jackson told me?
What did he tell you?
Ogba wanted to go against right tackles. He said, he's been lined up against the left tackle the entire time, wanted an opportunity to go some against the right tackle, did it, and got to the quarterback. And I think that is something that you're going to see more of. And listen, Von Miller goes against the right tackle. Khalil Mack goes against the right tackle. A lot of the best pass rushers in the NFL now are coming off that right tackle side, and I think you're going to see more of that with Emmanuel Ogba. By the way, Nick Mangold didn't practice today. It doesn't look good. So they'll be losing their longest tenured player, their best offensive lineman, Nick Mangold, for this game. How does that impact what they do? We've had problems at center all year, regardless of who's been playing. But you go from Mangold, something that's steady, something that's solid, something that's just dependable.
Danny Shelton should be eating good this weekend then.
Yes, he should, as he will be replaced by Wesley Johnson, who has only played a little bit but has struggled in run blocking so far this year for the Jets. So that's a look at this Jets team on offense. Of course, the quarterback, we didn't talk about him, Ryan Fitzpatrick. You want to know what Ryan Fitzpatrick is doing on this season?
Throwing picks.
It ain't pretty, folks. He's 136 of 237 for 1,561 yards. That's 6.6 yards per attempt, 6 touchdowns, 11 interceptions already on the season from Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's one of the areas this team needs to come through on the back end of this defense, getting turnovers from Fitzpatrick. Head coach Hugh Jackson at the podium now. I'm sure he'll address that and much, much more as the Browns get ready to take on the Jets.
How we doing? And see a lot of you guys out there today. Is it a little cold for you guys? Weather has changed, that's for sure. Getting a little chilly, but it was good. Huh? Oh, yeah, as long as we can. Yeah, as long as the fields hold up, we'll go outside. You know, the game's played outside for the most part. So, yeah, we'll be out there. All right, well, you have.
Are you ready to name Josh to start?
All signs are pointing in that direction, you know. Had another good practice today and worked hard. And, you know, so I think we're really trending that way right now.
Pryor and Joe Hayden.
Terrell practice was good. Joe was out there practicing on a limited basis, you know, but he practiced, did well, you know. So I think, you know, it's a good chance for both those guys. But, you know, again, we'll keep those guys. We'll kind of go a little bit more through the week, but they did practice today.
What have you seen out of him, and I guess how impressed have you been with his play, having to switch, you know, from half to half even?
Well, he's a pro, you know, and that's a good thing to have, especially this year, you know, with all the injuries and things we've dealt with, you know, and he's, you know, in games, you know, it's take the glove off, you got to go snap, and he doesn't blink, you know, and I think this team, his teammates are very important to him, and I think he's done a good job, you know, we've asked a lot of him, and he's responded to that challenge all the time.
Schottenheimer, could you talk about what you influence
you received from him? Oh, Marty's my guy. Marty brought me into this league. So I was at USC coaching with his son, Brian. I was a coordinator at USC. Brian was one of the coaches on our staff. And when Marty got the head coaching job at the Redskins, you know, he gave me my first opportunity to come in the National Football League and coach his running backs. So my time with him, I watched one of the most passionate football coaches I'd ever been around. You know, I know everybody has the stories about Marty just being crying, you know, and that's him, you know, because he's so passionate and about what he does and how he does it. But he taught me a ton about the running game being tough, you know, just what it meant to be a part of a team, you know, because it was his way and that's how he did things. And I think all the players respected him because he was a winner. You know, he believed in doing things right. And so a lot of that has rubbed off on me. Yes, me and Brian both were on the staff.
So did Brian turn him on to you, or did Marty know you?
No, I think Marty came to our games. You know, he came to a lot of the USC games at the time. He, you know, he was out of football. So he was at our games quite a bit. And hopefully I made an impression on him. And maybe Brian did have a little bit of say in that. But, I mean, I hope it was because he thought I had a future in football.
Brian
coached the quarterbacks, the running back coach. And that's what I wanted to do. Yes. Well, oh, no, I was a coordinator at USC at that time. I think for me, Brian at that time coached the tight ends. Mm-hmm. No, I think he might have had another one prior to that, but it was a good time.
From the standpoint of the 86 being recognized this week, question about Kosar, just in terms of you being a quarterbacks guy and your memories of Kosar as a quarterback.
Guy can sling it, man. He can throw the ball around the park. you know, and make plays. And obviously those are some good teams that you're talking about. So, you know, Bernie obviously is a household name here, and I have a lot of respect for him. I enjoy seeing him all the time when I get an opportunity to. He's always very pleasant, very good to talk to. We've had him out to practice, you know, during the spring. I think our players enjoyed that. You know, we just want some of that magic that he had to rub off on us, you know, because he did it and did it really well.
Why did you guys bring in Vitaly and then cut Malcolm? What was the kind of thinking? What does he do different, I guess, in fullback?
Well, I mean, again, as you guys know, we're always trying to improve. And if we see an opportunity to get better, you know, we're going to do it. You know, and I thought Malcolm's done some good things, but, you know, Dan offers a little different skill set, so we're going to try to use that as we move forward and give him a chance and see if he can get that done. I'm sorry?
Are you ready to rule Cody out?
No, I'm not. Not yet. You know, I think he has, we have one more day to kind of see where it is. I think we'll know more tomorrow, but it's looking that way, but not ready to say that for sure.
Callahan is another guy who's not the typical size quarterback, a little shorter than, you know, whatever, the prototype. You obviously don't have a problem with size at that position. Why not?
Well, I think what was important is at the time we didn't know what was going to happen this week. So I don't care how tall, short, whatever it was, you know, that was out there. We need to make sure that if something didn't go our way that we had, you know, people on the roster. So, you know, you go through and you find what's out there that can best help you in this particular point in time. And he was there.
Let's go on a larger scale then. Kessler, RG3, they're not typical size. So it's that same question, your thoughts on the physical aspects of the quarterback.
Well, I think, you know, I've worked with so many different types, tall types, short types, big, small, whatever you want to call it. I just like quarterbacks, period. You know, we're going to find, as we keep going through this process, you know, what's right and best for us. You know, and I think we've had some guys that have played, and it hadn't really been about their size or any of that. It's can you play the position? And I think that's kind of been proven out over time throughout the National Football League. Do you want a big guy who has all the characteristics that you look for? Yes, you love to have that. But sometimes it doesn't sort out that way.
Trango, he's limited with his knee. Are you going to have another change on the offensive line?
I never know. You know, he practiced today, so he did some things, and we'll see where he is after practice today. But it was good to have him back out there. Obviously, he didn't practice yesterday, so it was his first day back. So we'll see how it all shakes out here. I'm sorry? Good. He did some good things. I mean, there's, like I said the other day, there's some things he needs to improve, you know, but it was good to see him play as many snaps as he did, you know, and he got injured a little earlier in the game and went over to the sideline, and, you know, they told him, you're okay from a, you know, a structural standpoint. He went right back in. You know, he didn't want out. So I thought that was really a good sign. He wanted to be out there with those guys battling. And I thought he battled hard and battled well.
And there are all kinds of problems teams obviously can have with quarterbacks, and you've been through a few yourself over the years with Fitzpatrick, Jets, and all that. But the general question is, when there's not quarterback stability, how does that throw an organization off?
When there's not stability? No, it's tough, you know, because I think the team wants to know who the leader is. You know, we can say what we want, but the quarterback is normally the leader of the organization and team. You know, he's the face of the franchise. So when there's not that, you know, sometimes things are a little disarray. But you know, again, you know, the teams that have that, they have more stability, and their teams normally play decently. Not that they play great. Well, every team doesn't have that quality quarterback, but you got to go keep searching until you can find one. So, again, Ryan Fitzpatrick is you know, he's a veteran player. You know, he's played the game and he knows how to play. So the teams that have those guys, you know, they benefit from having them. The teams that don't, they're always searching to go try to find them.
It was early in the year when McCown last started the second game.
Mm-hmm.
But Pryor wasn't used at all at quarterback in that game. Was that a game plan thing, or did you, with a different quarterback, do you need Pryor as that?
Well, I don't look at it like that, Tony, more so than who we're facing, you know, and what we need to do to move the ball. You know, I think our job on offense is to try to score, you know, enough points to win. And so some game plans are different than others, and you have to do what you have to do to win. So at that time, I didn't think that's what we needed, you know, and you know, things have changed, you know, weekly as we've gone through this. But the most important thing we're trying to do on offense is find a way to score the ball, you know, and we'll do that by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. Well, the last two guys you mentioned have played a lot of football over the last, you know, several weeks. Ricardo more than anybody of that group, and then Rashard played more last week, and Jordan starting to, you know, find his way into game plans and things. So obviously they're playing a little earlier than maybe we wish, but you know, that's what they're here for. You know, so I think those guys are going to get better. They're seeing a lot as young players, you know, really early because they're thrust into playing. But, you know, sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad, you know. But at the same time, I think they're all growing, you know, at their pace, and I think they'll continue to get better. I think he's just got to keep playing. I think he did some good things on special teams. You know, again, it's about putting a group out there that we think give us the best chance. And at that time last week, you know, he just wasn't out there as much. You know, this week could be different. He might be out there quite a bit. So, you know, it's again, it's whether it's offense, defense, or special teams, we have a, you know, the goal is to try to beat the other team, defeat the other team. And sometimes you make decisions, you know, about who can do what based on what the game plan is. And that's how you play. You know, you try to play to the strengths of your team and do those things as often as you can.
On the special teams unit and how they're playing, they've had a lot of critical penalties this year. It's mm-hmm. inopportune times and that, but just from your view, what are you seeing with that unit? And, you know, what do you like, don't like?
Well, I think we're improving. You know, you just said it. I don't like the penalties, you know, because we have to play intelligent football. But I think Coach Tabor has done a good job. You know, a lot of the core guys that he's had in the past are not here. So I think he's developing a lot of young talent that way, you know, to give guys a chance. And sometimes that takes time. But I think our guys are getting better. I really like our specialists. You know, I like our field goal kicker. I like our punter. I think those guys are really good finds for us. I think they're doing well. I think our coverage units are continuing to get better. I think they're working hard at it every day. And, you know, again, I think if we can just continue to be consistent and get rid of the penalties, you know, we got a chance to be better, you know, as we move over these next 9 weeks. Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, he's that way. You know, he wants to be with his teammates and he wants to be out there. If you leave it to Cody, you'd be out there practicing throwing the ball right now. So I think our medical staff's done a good job, and I think he is starting to get it that this is something that, you know, you have to really work through. And they say concussion protocol for a reason, you know, and I think he understands that. But I do think he's getting better every day, and how close he'll be, you know, up to game time, I don't know that.
One other question about Schottenheimer. The year you were with him, I think he was fired after 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what are you trying to tell me, Tony?
No. And that was your first year in the NFL. So
yes.
My question is, I mean, was that a welcome to the NFL moment for you as a coach?
It was, and you know, it was really interesting that first year because he really came there and set the tempo. We had Bruce Smith, we had LeVar Arrington, a lot of good players, and we started off 0-5. You know, but then we flipped it, you know, won 8 of the next 11. You know, and that's, you know, we played Marty ball. The Marty ball was line up and run the ball and play great defense. And he had a lasting impression, in my opinion, of that organization when he left and he went to San Diego. And obviously we watched what he did there. So he had an outstanding career as a coach. He's somebody I really admire. And I appreciate him giving me, I'm very thankful for the opportunity he gave me to come to Washington with him.
After 14-2.
It happens. Marty's Marty. You know, Marty, one thing we all know about Marty, it's Marty's way. You know, Marty don't back down from anybody. He has a belief system. He believes in what he believes. He's won a lot of games, and he knows how to do it. And he's shown that everywhere he's been. So I have great respect for that. You know, sometimes that's, I'm kind of like that myself. You know, I kind of believe in what I believe in because that's the way you were raised. And you got to do those things that you trust and have strong passion about in order to get your team where it needs to be.
Just out of curiosity, if all signs are pointing to Josh and Coach still not ready yet, why are you not just naming him the starter?
Well, because, again, he's had an injury too, you know, and I think until, you know, when you go practice, things happen sometimes, as you know, Mary Kay. I mean, things get changed, and I've been in this now all year and been shocked. You know, we get up to a day before and here's somebody out. So again, until I, you know for sure, and I feel, that's why I say I feel really good that it's heading that way, but I want to be for sure from after practice and talking to our medical staff exactly where everything is.
That was Browns head coach Hugh Jackson. We will be back with more CBD right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Zenith, the industry leader in football protective technology, is a proud partner of the Cleveland Browns Helmets Program in association with the Ohio Lottery and University Hospitals. Zenith protects the athletes with revolutionary innovation. Learn more at zenith.com. That's X-E-N-I-T-H.com. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm here, wrapping up our first hour on CBD. Still to come, Tracy Howard will be joining us in studio. We will also have, we just heard from Hugh Jackson. By the way, all signs pointing to Josh McCown at quarterback. Hugh saying that it's not official, but it's as close as you can get there. And I think it's good. Josh McCown, I think at this point, gives you a much better chance to win than Kevin Hogan while Cody Kessler remains in the concussion protocol. And frankly, this team, we know, needs a victory.
Absolutely. And I think as you look at our quarterbacks that could potentially take a snap, we have weapons now. I think Josh McCown in some cases takes on the nature that Cody Kessler had as stabilizing the quarterback position, allowing us to throw the football down the field, get some first downs. I wouldn't be surprised if the protection is there, that if the shots down the field don't go up slightly, with maybe a little bit more trust in Josh McCown to make the right judgment decisions down the field against the right coverages. I think Kevin Hogan may have a role on the ground after what he accomplished running the football last week. And even furthermore, Terrell Pryor, with his health, can some of the trickeration we've incorporated with Terrell Pryor, where he lines up, maybe he runs his own read, you know, here or there, or there's something that we do out of it just to kind of keep the Jets on their toes. And because if you let Leonard Williams and Sheldon Richardson and Muhammad Wilkerson pin their ears back and just, you know, and you take away the run early, regardless of who's going to play quarterback for us, they're going to tee off on us. They're going to beat our guys up front because they're that good,
yeah,
that consistently. So we've got to do things offensively to keep them on their toes. The zone read is absolutely one of them. What else? Zone
screens.
Read, boot, screens. Again, Terrell Pryor runs reverse, double reverse, all that kind of stuff that gets them, you know, chasing the football, you know, and again, chasing ghosts sometimes, because the Jets could be prepared for something that, and spending time right now on something that doesn't even pop up in the game, but they have to be ready for it. And that's something that Hugh Jackson can do maybe early in a football game to, you know, to create some of those ghosts that they're like, they're thinking of, okay, there's the one, where's the two, where's the three they can do off of it. It all depends the trust and the plan that Hugh Jackson has and based on what he sees against the film for the Jets.
Yeah, and I think you're going to do whatever you can to slow down that front. We'll get into the defense in a second. We'll look at the special teams now. Their kicker is Nick Folk. He is 12 of 14 on the year. His two misses blocked, kind of Travis Coons-esque.
Yes.
Hasn't missed any kicks. It's just the ones that he's gone through have been blocked. If it's gotten past the line of scrimmage, he's made it. Their punter, Lachlan Edwards, considered to be a solid punter. As far as they go in the return game, this is a team. They've got Jalen Marshall, who is their punt returner and their kick returner on the season. And you know Jalen Marshall from his time with the Buckeyes. Not the fastest guy.
No.
He ran like a 4.5, 4.6.
Which is a lot of reason why he probably went undrafted. Undrafted.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he's just very productive. And I think he was in the H-back role at Ohio State. That's the Dontre Wilson role. That's the Braxton Miller role. A lot of fly sweeps. You know, getting the football in his hands in space. And that's how he made the New York Jets as a football team. Not the most dominant receiver, very unpolished, could have used another year at Ohio State, especially this year with all the young guys. Imagine him, you know, you throw him in the mix, coming back with JT Barrett, it might be a different story right now. But the fact is, he fought his tail off, he made that executive decision, and he's making money and making weight in the National Football League. Probably, I think, putting him in the room, even as crazy and outlandish sometimes as Brandon Marshall has been, you know, his career's had some ups and downs between Denver and Chicago and struggling with the, what was it? Was it depression? What was, or the like multi-personality disorder of some sort?
It was depression. Yeah. He's been a big advocate for that.
Correct.
And
so,
trying to help people out.
And exactly. And so I really think that all of that has kind of like gone downhill because his play has gone back up even at this like almost post-prime, you know, years of his career to be in a room to see how a guy like him approaches the game, as well as Eric Decker, who's been in the league for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years now. It's a very good place for Jalen Marshall, and I think for him to be active and have a role on this football team keeps him engaged and makes him feel a part of something bigger than himself. So, you know, props to him for taking a chance and working his tail off and deserve the opportunity to play in the National Football League.
Yeah, and you look at Jalen Marshall, 24.9 yards per kick return for the Browns. The leader, Tracy Howard, 15.9, only averaging 6.8 per punt return for the Browns. Duke Johnson, 7.8. Yeah, Brandon Marshall, and I'm just reading because after you said that, I wanted to look that up. And in 2013, he was wearing cleats to support Mental Illness Foundation,
right,
promote Mental Health Awareness Week. He said he was going to get fined. He didn't care. He's done a lot in terms of advocacy,
yes,
and he's tried to help out a lot of players in the league. And he really is just a great guy. He's got borderline personality disorder.
Right.
That's what it's called.
Okay.
And he's been huge in terms of spreading awareness and understanding about the illness. Obviously, we're going to hear from him, as we told you at the top of the show, around 2:30, his conference call with the Cleveland media. Fantastic. The guy's got a lot of charisma. He's very funny, very intelligent, very articulate, and really can touch on a lot of things in the league.
Yeah, I remember, you know, battles against him when he was with the Broncos. You know, they had a quality football team. We were, of course, you know, AFC champs, you know, almost every other year, but it was always contesting with Denver, and Denver was such a tough place to play. I remember Brandon Marshall one time had a custom pair of all white Air Force Ones that he had turned into cleats, and basically he wore them out, you know, got introduced in, you know, at that time it was like, you know, Mile High or Sports Authority Field, whatever the heck it's called now, and he runs out and I'm like, is he wearing Air Force Ones? And then it's like you see the bottom of him, they have like custom drilled cleats in them, and I'm like, how did he get Air Force One cleats? And then he runs like three routes, catches the ball like a 4-yard curl, and then falls down on the other three routes, and then they punt, and he comes out like in his regular like Nike shoes. So it must have been like all for show. And I just remember that about Brandon Marshall, like, you know, playing against him, I'm like, he's wearing Air Force One cleats. But now
that
they have,
you're
like Jordan cleats.
Yeah,
you know, Dez is a Jordan guy.
Sure. Yeah, Corey Coleman.
Corey Coleman is a – yeah, exactly. It's great.
Yeah, it is. It is a great thing. So that's a look at them on the special team side of things. Again, neither team doing a whole lot. Now, it's interesting as I'm looking at the individual statistical leaders for these teams. Here's something that's very interesting to me. Their leader in completion percentage is Fitzpatrick, 57%. Browns, Kessler, 67. Passer rating, Kessler, 94.4. Fitzpatrick, 66.5. Rushing yards, Forte, 460 for the Browns. Crow, 495. Rushing touchdowns, 4 for Forte, 4 for Crow. Receptions, their top guys, Inunua, 32 for the Browns, Pryor, 35. Yards from scrimmage, Forte, 607. Yards from scrimmage, Crow, 602. First downs, Forte, 27 for the Browns. First downs, Crow, 30. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Tackles, Kirksey, 58 to lead the team. Tackles for their team, Leonard Williams, the lineman who is doing everything, leads the team in tackles at 39, also leads the team in sacks with 5. On his way into the Dog Bowl right now is Browns rookie safety, Tracy Howard, undrafted free agent from the U. Star made his first start last week, and he joins us here in the Dog Bowl right now. What's up, Tracy?
How you doing, man?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Good. Can't complain.
Kind of a crazy season for you, huh?
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's a blessing, though.
How's it been going from, you know, spending a lot of time at corner? I know in the preseason you did spend some time at safety as well, to now being the starting free safety for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, you know, it's been good, but it's definitely been an adjustment. I think I'm handling it very well, you know, especially with the help of, you know, my coaches, you know, with Lou and Coach Ray and the older guys, you know, they push me, you know, and, you know, I'm coming along very well because I got some great help.
And we're here with Browns starting safety Tracy Howard on WKNR Cleveland. And the one thing I wanted to go back to in having you on the show today, knowing we were going to get you, was going back to, you know, Hugh Jackson's comments in training camp about my guy Tracy Howard. And you kind of fell into the good graces very early of Hugh Jackson. What were the things you were doing out on the practice field? Was it just really your job and the effort you were giving that the coaches and doing what the coaches were asking to kind of fall into such a great place? Because you're like one of the only guys that he said my guy about, you know, throughout training camp.
Yeah, you know, I just basically just went out there and just been myself every day. You know, I just try to just learn and still learning. You know, just really just try to go out there and do what the coaches ask. You know, that's it. You know, just learn the defense as quick as possible. You know, and do everything they were asking me to do. You know, that's nothing more, nothing less, you know, and just really just be myself at the end of the day, you know,
sure.
Not force anything, just go out there and have fun.
What's the biggest difference between playing corner and playing free safety?
The biggest difference, I would say, is space. You know, a corner is way more simple, and in that safety, you have to make the calls. You got to be like the quarterback of the defense, you know, most of the time. So at corner, you know, you just, I got this guy most of the time, and that's it. You know, your job is very simple. But at safety, you know, you have to do a lot. You got to be more involved, you know, with communicating and things like that. But it's been pretty good.
What did you think you did well against the Bengals, and what do you want to improve on?
I just want to improve overall on my communication, you know, communication, tackling, you know, as a whole, you know, and things like that. But
Part of it a lot different communication? Because when you're corner, you got your guy and you're covering him.
You still have to communicate. It's a lot of motions and shifts and,
sure,
you know, changing things like that. It's a lot of moving parts, you know, and things like that, depending on, you know, what you're playing or what you're in. So at corner, you have to communicate as well. But the safety at the end of the day, you know, overrule. So The safety have more communication. But, yeah.
Looking forward to the New York Jets this week. You've got the challenge of Brandon Marshall and the player that he's been over the course of a very long career. Quincy Enunwa, who's been very productive as a young football player. But as you watch film on them, you know, what do you have to be ready for? And then do your eyes kind of light up knowing you're going to get Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's thrown the football to the other team an awful lot as well?
I'm just going into this game, man, just going to do what I do. You know, it's really not about those other guys. You know, it's about me and my team, and, you know, and what we do. You know, it's really not about them. That's how I look at it, you know, and things like that. But they're definitely some good players. You know, Brandon Marshall, you know, he's been a good player a long time in this league, and probably a future Hall of Famer. You know, Quincy Enunwa, he's been doing very well and very productive. And they also got a couple other guys, you know, that can do a good job. But at the end of the day, it's really about what we do.
Had you ever played safety before?
Yeah, high school.
In high school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had some of the instincts were there? Is it like riding a bike?
Yeah, I mean, it was very natural for me, you know, just playing defensive back period. You know, I've always been a good communicator back there, and I always was a smart player. I always prided myself on being, like, you know, a smart guy. You know, and that safety, you really get to show off, you know, how smart you is, you know, with communicating and things like that. So I think it felt natural for me.
And also in the NFL nowadays, free safeties are asked to cover and come up and play man a lot more than they used to be. So that's something, obviously, that it would be very natural for you given your background.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially with that part of it, I think I could definitely, you know, be one of the best, you know, free safety guys in the league, you know, in the coming years with that skill set, you know, because I think I could easily be one of the best cover guys. You know, in the league. You know,
that's that swag from the U right there. I like it. That's right. All that belief. I like it. Tracy, what's it been like? You know, what's the biggest difference? And I like asking the rookies this, you know, now that you're 7 games into the NFL, what's the biggest difference in the NFL from college? Because you did play big time college football, but what's the biggest difference?
I'll say the biggest difference is time management. You know, in college, you know, you got people like, they're really forcing you to do certain things. Like, you know, you have to watch film here. You know, you got to go to practice here. You got to do this, you know. But in the league, you know, it's really all on you. You know, when you go home, there's no one, you know, with a leash on you, you know, telling you what to do. So you really got to just be a man, you know, and handle your business, you know, like a man. So that's the biggest difference. You and plus, you don't have school, so it's more free time, you know. So with your free time, you got to definitely manage that better, you know, and find, you know, people to get around, you know, that's got a positive influence on you, because it's a lot more time. And plus, you have more money.
Right.
So that's sure. Another difference. You know, you got to be honest with that, too. You know, so you got more time and money in your hands, so you got to be smart about that.
And you mentioned your time management and get around the people, you know, that are of the same wavelength with you. Is there any player or players on the Browns football team that you kind of you watch film with, or that you hold accountable or hold each other accountable to make sure you do manage your time very well?
Yeah, when I first got in, man, the older guy, they did a great job of taking me in, especially True. True took me in, you know, under his wing, man. And him, Jamar, and Joe, you know, I really look up to those guys. You know, they're like my big brothers, man. They really do a good job with the young guys, just, you know, watching film, you know, with us, helping us out, you know, seeing things clear on the field. And anytime we have a problem, we can go to those guys.
Sure.
You know, and also, I mean, even some of the rookies, man, like Brian Body Calhoun, you know, man, we built a good relationship since he's been here. And, you know, we stay on each other, you know, hold each other to a high standard.
That's great.
Yeah. And what's it like? I mean, you're in the secondary, and right now you've been starting two undrafted free agents together, yourself and Brian Body Calhoun. Mm-hmm. Do you guys kind of rally around that? Because, I mean, the reality is when you do go undrafted, that's, you know, does that put a chip on your shoulder and say, I'm here to come out and prove that not only do I belong in this league, but that I'm going to be good in this league?
Yeah, definitely. You know, that I think that'll forever be on my heart, you know, especially going undrafted, you know, and thinking I was supposed to get drafted, you know. You know, that's always how I'm going to look at it, you know. So I'm going to forever have a chip on my shoulder when it comes to that. And he do as well. So, you know, we definitely, you know, we look at each other in the same way a lot, you know, because we was in the same situation, you know, and things are playing out, you know, kind of the same for us, you know. So definitely being back there with him, it means a lot to both of us, man. And I'm really blessed to be in this position.
So for people who aren't as familiar with it, once you do go through the draft and you aren't drafted, it's kind of like recruiting all over again.
Definitely.
Yeah. What made you choose the Cleveland Browns?
What made me choose? It was a no-brainer. You know, once I talked to Coach Ray, and, you know, he was the only guy that really seen me as a safety. You know, and once he told me that, he told me, you know, he gonna allow me to play corner and safety, you know, in the preseason. I mean, once I heard that, it was a no-brainer.
That's like, opportunity, right?
That's opportunity. Yeah. I got two opportunities now. You know, you know, so I get to show off my skills at corner and safety. And plus, I thought about it, like, it gives me more value.
Sure.
You know, of course. The more you can do.
Yeah.
That's right.
So when I thought about it like that, it was a no-brainer. I'm like, yeah, it's Cleveland it is.
All right. So you talked about having a lot more free time, and I know you use a lot of that to study film and be prepared, et cetera. But when you're actually taking some downtime, because everybody needs that, no matter even the hardest working professionals, what do you like to do?
Man, I'm a chill guy, man. We be on the field so much that I just like to relax, you know. So I probably go to the movies.
Huh?
Like 2 days ago, I went to the movies like by myself.
What's the best movie you've seen lately?
Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart Stand Up.
Is it good?
Yeah, I was in the movie theater like by myself. Like, I was the only one in there.
Laughing? Laughing to yourself?
Yeah, I guess everyone was at the Cavs game, the Indians game. So it was like, I'm like, where everybody at? But yeah, everybody was gone. I was like literally the only one in there. But yeah, I was in there laughing by myself. Like, I left early. I was like, yeah, somebody, they might think I'm weird. So I gotta get up out of here.
Did you play any video games?
No, I don't play video games.
No. All right. A lot of guys do. A lot of guys play Madden.
A lot of guys play video games. I stopped. I used to break the controller, man. I'm too competitive.
I'm with you, understand the feeling very well. I think everybody who's played Madden has gone through a controller or two, and you get some. That's the computer causing this fumble. This is unjust. What is the deal here? Yes. Well, Tracy, thanks so much for being with us here today. Congratulations on your ascension into the starting lineup, and best of luck to you. And hopefully get that first win this Sunday against the Jets.
Appreciate you guys, man.
All right. Tracy Howard, the Browns starting free safety, our guest here on CBD. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. We'll take a look as well at this Jets defense. Now, we told you their offense was struggling. Their defense not struggling nearly as much. They are, in fact, one of the best in the league against the run. But where are they vulnerable? Probably going to surprise you when you think about who they've got out there at cornerback. We'll tell you when we come back on CBD.